Everyone, I'd like to call to order the March 18th, 2021 TPA Governing Board meeting. This meeting is conducted in both in person and virtually using the Zoom webinar platform. Instructions to join the meeting are provided and any assistance are provided in the published meeting agenda. With that, glad to see you here today, Mayor Wilson. Will you please give us a prayer?
Sure.
Thank you. Let's join them. And then
let us pray. Oh, Heavenly Father, we come to you once again with bowed heads and humble hearts, thanking you for your grace and your mercy. Realizing, Father, that over and over again, that through your grace and your mercy, you've been better to us than we've been to ourselves. And with that, we say thank you. Thank you, Father, for allowing us to navigate through these crises. Whether it's a virus that seemed to spread abroad, or storms that seem unstoppable, earthquakes that are sometimes unpredictable, and wars that we declare against each other. And yet through it all, you still are with us, showing us your tender love and mercy. We say thank you. Father, you know it's been a most difficult season of life. And you know also that it's very easy for us to be discouraged or lose hope in times like these. Help us place our hope in you, realizing that you are the bridge over troubled waters. You're the doctor in the sick room. You're the leader of the valley. You're the bright and morning star. You're the Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the ending. And finally, Father, we send a special prayer for our chairperson. Father, you know his heart, you know his soul. And to all of us that you allowed to be assembled here today, realizing that we're no strangers to each other, just perhaps friends who have not yet met. We give you all the praises and the glory. Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Margie, can we have a roll call, please?
Yes, sir. At this time, I'm only asking those board members attending in person to respond by saying here when I call your name. I want to remind you to unmute your microphones by pressing the button on the base. And when the top part is red, it means it's on.
As opposed to green?
Yes, sorry about that. Alternates, please also state your name if you are attending on behalf of a TPA board representative. Joni Brinkman is absent. Joel Flores.
Jonathan Pierce on behalf of Joel Flores.
Stephen Grant.
Present.
Jim Koretsky.
Present.
Douglas Lawson. Maria Marino.
Present.
Melissa McKinley. Michael Napoleon.
Here.
Corey Nearing.
Commissioner Lambert, here for Corey Nearing.
Joseph Paduzzi.
Here.
Shelley Petrolia.
Julie Castile on behalf of Shelley Petrolia.
Thank you. Fred Pinto.
Here.
Chelsea Reed.
Here.
Maria Sachs.
Commissioner MacBernard on behalf of Commissioner Maria Sachs.
Scott Singer.
Commissioner Yvette Drucker on behalf of Mayor Scott Singer.
Andy Thompson.
Thankful to be here.
The city of Lake Worth Beach is vacant at this time, so they will be marked as absent. Catherine Waldron.
Here.
Robert Weinroth.
Here.
Greg Weiss.
Here.
Steve Wilson?
Yeah.
We have a quorum in person, Mr. Chair.
We have a quorum present?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Now, what about members who are participating remotely?
So, sir, under the modifications to the agenda, I do have a script to read. So, pursuant to state law, a quorum of the TPA board must be physically present at the advertised meeting site in order to conduct the meeting and take action as a body. However, additional members may participate remotely provided that they have a significant circumstance that justifies their absence, with significant circumstance being reasonably determined by the physically present members. I will now read the list of members that have provided a brief explanation of the significant circumstance preventing their in-person attendance so that the board may determine if these members will be admitted into the meeting as virtual participants. Please note that voting members approved to participate remotely will be enabled to participate in debate, and also that they must vote unless they have documented a conflict of interest on a particular item. So I have Council Member Jonathan Pierce, a newly appointed alternate for the City of Green Acres, requested permission to attend remotely due to conflicting city responsibilities. I also have that Commissioner Melissa McKinley, who I do not believe has joined us yet, requested to attend remotely as she is in Tallahassee for the Florida Association of Counties Leg Day.
So that's it?
That's just it.
Okay, are there any members here that have any objections to these members participating remotely? Okay, seeing none, then they will be able to participate.
Yes, we will promote them to panelists.
Yes. Okay. Now, just regarding general public comments, as a reminder, there are three ways to provide comments from the public for this meeting. We can take written comments, maybe submitted online at the website provided in the agenda. There can be verbal comments made by virtual attendees using the raise your hand feature in the Zoom platform. The Zoom webinar is what we're, having a virtual concept on. And verbal or written comments may be provided by in person, submitting a comment card available at the welcome table. Have we received any general comments in advance?
No, Mr. Chair, no general public comments.
Okay, and we received no comment cards
for anyone
at this present
time.
Here. All right, with that being said, then, and no one's got their hand raised for general comments.
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
All right, then we'll close this item and move on to the next agenda item. Okay, it's proclamation time, this special presentations. Everyone knows this is the Bicycle Month, and we have a proclamation on behalf of the Transportation Planning Agency that I'd like to share this morning, declaring March 2021 as Florida Bicycle Month. Whereas the state of Florida and the Florida Bicycle Association, can everybody hear me okay, recognizes officially as Florida Bicycle Month, and the Palm Beach Transportation Planning Agency will recognize it locally. And whereas the Palm Beach TPA collaborates with the Florida Department of Transportation, Palm Beach County, PalmTran, its municipalities, and other stakeholders to encourage bicycling as an alternative form of transportation. And whereas the Palm Beach TPA has set a target of zero bicycle-related fatalities and serious injuries, and whereas the Palm Beach TPA plans, prioritizes, and funds bicycle facilities that improve safety for its constituents, and whereas through these efforts, Palm Beach County now has over 230 miles of designated bicycle facilities, with more than 600 miles of additional bicycle facilities planned, and will continue to promote a connected network of improved bicycle level service. So now therefore be proclaimed by the governing board of the Palm Beach Transportation Planning Agency, assembled in a regular session this 18th day of March 2021, that the month of March 2021 in Palm Beach County is hereby proclaimed Florida Bicycle Month. Be it further proclaimed by the governing board of the Palm Beach Transportation Planning Agencies that these proclamation is duly sealed, ribboned, and executed by the chair and vice chair of the board. So with that, I'd like to invite the vice chair. I think he has a proclamation to share with us as well.
Not to be outdone by the TPA. I'm not going to repeat the entire proclamation because the verbiage is very close, and we all understand that bicycling is something that we certainly want to be encouraging. But I want to also talk about safety. And certainly this month, we've seen in the news that there are a lot of fatalities in our state. In fact, Florida is the 13th highest state. Well, Florida actually is the worst state, the number one state for pedestrian and bicycle fatalities. Our county, which is grouped with Miami-Dade and Broward, is the 13th highest in the state. So we need to do something as a board here to commit ourselves to Vision Zero, commit ourselves to the safety of our walking and bicycling public. And I hope that this month, that is Bicycle Month, we will not just focus on it this month and forget about it for the other 11 months. So again, you know, it's important that we encourage people to bicycle, but it's also important that we make sure it's safe for them to do that each and every day. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Do we have a number, Nick, of how many cities issued their own individual proclamations?
We do. We actually have it on the screen right now.
Oh, gee, okay.
And Mr. Chair, I was actually hopeful that we could invite a couple of folks. The county's Parks and Rec Department is here, and then some of the staff from the TPA. And I don't see the Department of Engineering and Public Works, but we wanted to do a brief photo with the chair and the vice chair and the proclamations, if we
could.
That's
an idea. Let's do that. So we're going to break momentarily for a photo op. Okay.
We're just going to have the two of you. I have my bicycle tie on. Smile, everybody.
If you can tell.
Yeah, look in the eyes. You can see it in the eyes. Thanks a lot. He's talking about you guys. I don't have any.
That's right.
All right.
Great.
Thank you.
All right. Okay.
Consider it delivered.
Thank you. Yes. Here, Alyssa. Yeah.
Okay. How come you have to take it down? Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you all very much. And we have our bike ride. What day is that?
It is a week from tomorrow.
So if you haven't signed up yet, you still have time. Okay. Comments, item F is comments from the chair. And the first thing I'd like to do is I'd like to welcome some new members that are here today attending the meeting, starting with Council Member Yvette Drucker from the city of Boca Raton. Over here, gotcha. Okay, sorry, I'm looking the wrong way. Yeah. Julie Casal from the city of Delray Beach.
Right side.
There yes. You go. Okay. And Council Member Jonathan Pierce from the city of Green Acres as newest alternates for their respective cities.
Jonathan's online.
Jonathan, you're online? You out there? He's on mute?
He's muted.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Okay. Well, welcome, sir. Okay, good. All right. I also would like to give a brief update. Last month, we had the quarterly SEFTC meeting, and a couple of things we did really at this meeting I need to share with you. One was that we approved a list of regional projects for transportation regional incentive programs, better known as TRIP. We got so many acronyms. Funding and directing staff of the three MPLs to schedule. The other thing was to schedule a workshop to discuss what we call a shared visional approach or strategic approach to advancing commuter rail on the FEC corridor. I think that workshop has been scheduled for April 30th. Is that correct?
Yep.
And the significance of that is normally this body meets once a quarter. And I guess our discussion indicated it was important enough to schedule a special meeting to really start talking about this and getting some focus around it. I sure would be interested in any feedback and input any member on this board has regarding that subject. I'm sure there are cities out there who this discussion will have some direct impact on. So if you could please get your thoughts and inputs into Nick, hopefully before the 30th, so we can incorporate your thinking on that. You want to add anything to that, Nick?
Sure, Mr. Chair. The TPA board members may recall in December of 2020, we did a presentation of the status of various elements of passenger rail on the FEC corridor throughout South Florida. We looked at Miami-Dade County, we looked at Broward County, and we looked at Palm Beach County and talked about where different elements of passenger rail might be in that corridor. The region wants us to basically compile that information and present it so that all of our elected officials, as well as our staff members from the various agencies working on this, will be up to speed, and then we can figure out how do we work strategically together to advance passenger rail, especially on the FEC corridor. I guess the other thing I want to mention is we're going to be reaching out to especially the cities in Palm Beach County that have advanced
to the point of discussion or even implementation of stations on the FEC corridor. So we're going to have West Palm, we're going to have Boca Raton, and we're going to have Palm Beach Gardens be a component of our presentation of what's happening here in Palm Beach County. So we'll be reaching out to your staff for those three cities, and I wanted to give everyone an update on that.
Okay. Any specific questions on that item? All right, if not, then I'll open the floor to any member who has a report or information they'd like to share. Sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick report. Yesterday, Nick and I had lunch with the mayor from Fort Lauderdale, city of Fort Lauderdale, and it was really an interesting conversation. He just came back from a trip to Las Vegas where they had looked at the Musk project that's being done out there. It's basically for the boring company. And if you haven't followed the news, what they're doing is they're creating a technology where they're able to go and create tunnels without basically having to disrupt everything above surface. They're going right below the infrastructure of the area, and they actually bore and create the tunnel as they're moving forward. And I think that this is really very exciting technology, and it's got real application for what we're looking at as far as our traffic problems here in the Southeast, especially in the areas that are where the train tracks are crossing, FEC and CSX. As Brightline comes through, as we get additional freight, a lot of us on the East are seeing that our cities are being cut in half, especially when trains stop because of an emergency or because of traffic. So, you know, when I originally saw this, I saw it as an opportunity to put traffic below the train tracks. And the other alternate is actually to have the train tracks put below the roads. And FEC has actually looked at this and is looking at it as a potential for the future. So this is really exciting technology. I know it's sort of geeky, but you know, this is certainly an opportunity for us to look at in the future, not only for transportation, but also for utilities and for other things to get them underground and to, again, make it less congested for us. So I thought it was a real exciting discussion, and hopefully in the near future, we might have an opportunity to see part of this project and how it's unfolding, and then see if there's an application here in South Florida. Thank you.
Is that, from an engineering standpoint, a viable option in this region, what the water table is?
Even with our water table. In fact, one of the things that was pointed out is their water table is actually high in Las Vegas.
Really?
Yeah. So,
they're
dealing with those issues and pumping and things like that. Okay. And it would be viable. And it's an exciting opportunity. Mr. Musk is going to take us to the moon, and he's going to take us under the FEC tracks.
So who would lead that initiative here? Or is it the private railroad?
Well, it's going to be a matter of a public-private partnership here. Okay. And I think the technology is available. And Nick can probably, add on to what I've reported. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a matter of FEC embracing it. Certainly, they already have the right of way. So there's not an issue of having to take additional right of way. And, I think the technology is not that expensive. It's got application beyond even, let's say, crossing tracks. We could getting people from the airport out to the Glades.
Absolutely.
And so there's a lot of things that we could be doing if we have this tunnel technology.
And we have the funding to do this, but that's a whole
funding.
That's a whole nother conversation, but okay.
We'll have another, we'll print some more money in Washington.
That's one way. That's it?
That's it. Thank you.
All right. Councilman. Jim.
I just wanted to report in, reflecting on for the town and for the county with regard to safety and the fact that the state has been identified as the 13th, number 13, and pedestrian unsafety. I'm interested to read this 2021 Dangerous by Design, which Nick has on his listing of his executive director report, because the Brightline project is dangerous by design. I've been advocating almost forever that we have to have some kind of pedestrian sealed corridor areas in areas of known crossings and to date. And Nick's been very helpful with us. And we had made progress with Brightline in the past. And we had gone as far as they had gone as far as to in fact include some targeting fencing on their drawings. And so we had reviewed it as a council and we added a little bit of scope. And we feel like that was the minimum to protect our residents from 109-mile-an-hour trains that are going to be coming through our community in areas where we've had known pedestrian crossings. It was on one side, again, I think it was very, very cost-effective. And, well, surprisingly, I think there's been a changeover in Brightline because they were kind of like, they didn't even know how that ended up on their drawings. So we're back at square one. Really? And we're going to continue to kind of push them. They said they're going to look at it more broadly. And that's why I wanted to share it here with other municipalities that are along the corridor. Let's hurry up and look more broadly before Brightline starts moving at high speed, because it's predictable. We're going to have fatalities and it'll really be, everyone will be tragic because they would have been, it could have been and can be prevented by design. So I'm going to continue to advocate that and hopefully, and I appreciate, I brought this up before and Nick again has been extremely helpful. And I did want to share that we had, while we had made progress with Brightline where they had put fencing on the drawings,
right.
I think because of changeover, the new people in there are thinking, well, we don't know how that got on there, but we're not doing anything yet. So disturbing, but hopefully that'll be resolved with this broader look they claim they're doing. So Jupiter's prepared with our ask of where we need it. And again, I think it's very, very reasonable, the ask. It's in limited areas. It's on one side. I mean, you know, we could say it should be entirely. No, we're reasonable. So I just want to bring it to awareness. And I would hope other municipalities along the corridor, even those that are in the area of existing Brightline where it was going at 79 mile an hour, let's take a look at it, right? And let's come up with a plan here and let's do a proper, let's make it safe by design. So anyway, I just wanted to report in. Thank you.
You want to add anything to that, Nick?
No.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, sir. I don't see any other cards up at this time. So if that's the case, we're going to move forward.
For our new members here, if you want to be recognized, just put your sign up.
You guys knew that already, right? No? You didn't?
I figured it out.
Okay. That's the usual way we do it. You figure it out. No, but thanks. Thanks, Bob. We have an executive director's report, Nick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to, I have a number of items on the report that we are going to cover. I want to touch on three that are not on the report really quickly. First, many of you know that I call the University of Kentucky my alma mater. I actually have 2 degrees from them. And in March, traditionally, this is an exciting time of year. We are eating a large slice, if not the entirety, of a humble pie this year. We are not in the NCAA tournament. But for those of you whose schools are, the tournament kicks off today. And we're excited that at least in this COVID timeframe, we are able to have a basketball tournament like that for our college students and the fans and whatnot. So good luck to those of you who are in the tournament. We miss you. We hope to see you next year. Today is actually Transit Driver Appreciation Day, and I wanted to give a shout out to all of our transit drivers, especially the folks at PalmTran and the operators at TriRail who keep our transit services running. Our publicly operated transit services are happening right now in the midst of a pandemic. Those folks are risking their safety. They're providing that essential service, and they're providing access to opportunity for everyone. Part of PalmTran's vision statement, they're trying to provide that service so that people in our community can get to their schools, their shopping, their services, their destinations. And so we're thankful for them. And then also I wanted to mention, for those of you who hadn't had a chance to meet him yet, David Tulsis is here this morning with us. He is with Weiss Sirota and he is standing in for Paul Gugelman. Paul is unable to be with us this morning, but I wanted to make sure we recognize David and his attendance at the meeting today. Okay. Now to the printed part of the report. We have a TPA staff update. 2 individuals I want to recognize for you. First, Robin Prebramsky is our executive secretary. She's in the back of the room. Joined us just a couple of weeks ago. We're excited to have her as part of the TPA team. And then Connor Campobasso is our long-range transportation plan coordinator, and he's also going to be leading our state road modifications projects section. So if you have state roads that pass through your communities and you want us to advocate for and try to fund changes to them, Connor's going to be the guy you want to get to know at the TPA. We are excited about their contributions to the TPA as an agency, and we look forward to them helping us collaboratively advance our vision and mission. I'm going to remind those of you who have not yet made a Citizens Advisory Committee nomination, there are 10 of you that we need Citizens Advisory Committee nominations for, from. Each one of you as an elected official has an opportunity to nominate someone from your community to serve on our Citizens Advisory Committee. There is we've actually distributed a letter with some guidance on what kinds of people we are seeking for the Citizens Advisory Committee. There are state law guidelines on the types, the demographic groups that we would like to ensure are represented on our community, on our committee. And then we also have in our operating procedure some additional targeted industries and sectors that we want to encourage you to consider when you're selecting a nomination. We're going to continue to reach out to the 10 of you who have not yet submitted nominations. And for those of you who have, the 11 of you who have already done that, we thank you for those nominations. I want to mention we are in year 6 of a 5-year transportation bill on the federal level. So when Commissioner Weinroth said that we're going to encourage the feds to print more money so that we can invest in tunneling projects, now is the opportunity as Congress is debating the content of a new 5-year transportation bill. Now is the opportunity for us to advocate for changes to what is able to be funded and to the magnitude of funding that is invested in transportation at a federal level. And one of the items that we wanted to mention is that Smart Growth America is helping us monitor a Complete Streets Act that was introduced by Senator Markey and Congressman Cohen from Massachusetts and Tennessee, respectively, talking about the importance of investing, as Vice Mayor Weinroth mentioned, investing in safety to protect our most vulnerable users while we are building the transportation projects that provide mobility for our communities. And we've already mentioned that March is Florida Bicycle Month, and we do want to encourage any board members who have not yet signed up to join us next Friday morning for a short bike ride. We're going to meet here at 7:45. We're going to have pedals up at 8 a.m. It's going to be a few miles, easy pace, lots of fun, and then refreshments afterward if anyone wants to come out and join us. And it's a round trip. We're going to meet here at the TPA. We're going to go out into the community, and we'll come back here. So it'll be easy to participate in that if you're interested. Number 5 on the report is an interesting opportunity. We have a gentleman by the name of Paul Comfort is an author and nationally recognized expert in public transportation. He's actually going to be here in Palm Beach County later this month, March 23rd, next week. And he's going to be doing a presentation, which we have made available to participate both in person and virtually. If anyone's interested in coming here, or if you just want to enroll in the opportunity to participate in that presentation virtually, talking about the content of his book, The Future of Public Transportation, and really looking, it's a brand new book, and it's looking at the impact of the pandemic as well as how does public transportation fit into the vision of our communities going forward. So we're excited to welcome him and look forward to your participation in that. Again, some conversation, I think Councilman Koretsky mentioned this earlier about the Transportation for America releases in every 2 years an update to a report called Dangerous by Design that looks at the incident level, the rate of crashes that involve pedestrians and bicyclists. And they did recognize Florida as the most dangerous state for pedestrians in the United States. And as Vice Mayor Weinroth mentioned, Southeast Florida is the 13th most dangerous urbanized area within the state of Florida. That's actually within the country, 13th most dangerous within the country. Yeah, I think the conversations that were happening here are very relevant. They're very important, and the urgency can't be denied with the data compiled in the way that it has been. And so we're eager to work with our county. We're eager to work with the DOT. We're eager to work with our cities to construct projects that provide safer environments for all of those vulnerable users. And then item 7, just mentioning again, we've mentioned this in the past, there is an AARP community grant available. It's not a lot of money, but it's small money available for quick action projects, for things that you want to do with paint and with cones to test out concepts before we make major investments in modifications to our transportation system. So we want to make sure that you as elected officials are aware and your staff are aware of this opportunity for funding through the AARP. It's an interesting partnership that the AARP has said, hey, we'd really like to make our communities livable for our residents as they elect to age in place. And so we're trying to make all ages and abilities investments in infrastructure. And they're not just saying, hey, let's advocate for that so that we can do it with other people's money. They're throwing some dollars on the table. And that's a good thing to see. Item 8, we like to remind our local communities, especially those who operate their own law enforcement services, that there are statewide grants available for high visibility enforcement. This is a program through the DOT. They're taking a portion of the federal funds that come to Florida. They're making them available to local communities to basically pay overtime for law enforcement officers in high crash locations for pedestrian and bicycle activity. So we can pay those officers to go out into those locations in addition to the time that they would regularly serve. So this is not detracting from the law enforcement coverage that your community would be able to provide with your standard resources. These are additional resources asking these enforcement officers to spend a little bit more time encouraging proper behaviors, warning people when they see wrong behaviors, both drivers and pedestrians and bicyclists, and then ultimately issuing citations if those wrong behaviors persist. Mention again that we have a website on our, a page on our website rather, highlighting transportation conferences. We have a strategic plan that says we want you to be informed as to what's happening in other parts of the country and other parts of the world. And so if you ever see a conference on there that you'd like to participate in, let me know, let Margie know. The TPA does reimburse the cost of participation in those kinds of events. And last, on the backside of the printed copy, we have a summary of the applications that we've received just this past month. They were due February 28th for our three funding programs, the Local Initiatives Program, which is primarily county and city roads and some transit applications. We have a list of the 10 projects that were submitted. And as a reminder, 5 of these 10 projects were submitted last year, but they were not able to be funded because of the TPA board's direction to us to fund the State Road 80 streetlights. So we've kept those 5 projects from last year on the top of the list. We received 5 new applications. The total of those 10 projects, they're seeking a total funding of $30 million. We only have $20 million available in the program. So we will be working through the prioritization process to recommend to you which of those projects ought to be funded, but we wanted to make you aware that those applications were submitted and the entities that submitted them, as well as a location description there, is on the page. And then as far as the Transportation Alternatives Program, that's our $3 million a year smaller project pedestrian bicycle investments. We had 5 applications submitted totaling $4.4 million, and we have a little bit more than $3 million. So again, we'll be working through the scoring of those and recommending a prioritized list to you. That will come to you in July. And the last is our State Road Modifications Program. This is primarily projects on the state highways where we've identified an opportunity to either add to an upcoming maintenance project or proactively modify a road to address an existing condition, a problem that maybe is on the state road that we think can be modified through construction or addition of some element to the state highway that would address safety and improve mobility. And so there are 5 items on this list. 3 of them are supplements to existing resurfacing and capacity projects. One of them was identified by the city of Boca Raton. And we do want to encourage our other cities to look not just at the county and city roads in your communities, but at the state roads, and give us suggestions if you have them for projects that we could do on your state roads to make your communities a little bit better. And then 2 of them were actually identified by TPA staff, and we're working together with the communities that those state roads pass through or nearby and talking about the logistics and the details of those projects to enhance street lighting and improve pedestrian safety on Forest Hill Boulevard and Congress Avenue. So that was a lot of information, but Mr. Chair, that does conclude my report. Thank you for the opportunity to give the board an update.
Okay. Are there any questions?
Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
Nick, you alluded to the $20 million from last year that we diverted to a project that's near and dear to Mayor Wilson. And I was wondering if you could give us a little update on what's going on with that.
Sure. And particularly, we actually had a number of projects that were submitted last year to our local initiatives program. 3 of them were able to be funded. The other 5 were not, because the State Road 80 street lighting project is approximately a $14 million construction, $13 million construction phase. And so in order to fund the full $13 million for construction in fiscal 26, we had to defer the funding of some of the other projects that were submitted to our local initiatives program. But the streetlights are funded for construction in fiscal year 26. The design is funded fiscal year 22. And we are actively working right now with the department and with the county to work out the details of the maintenance agreement that will have to be executed for the State Road 80 streetlights, as well as talking with FPL about the potential for a design, build, operate, and maintain agreement, where FPL would take the lead on the design and the construction and maintenance of those streetlights, which we think may actually allow for the project to be implemented at a lower cost than what we've programmed. We've kind of taken a conservative approach on the programming and said, these are the worst case numbers if the department has to design and construct the streetlights themselves, but we may be able to work with FPL to maybe reduce the cost and accelerate the schedule, and we're having those discussions right now as well.
Thank you, Nick.
Just to be clear on that, so the project is funded, but it's for out years, you said planning 25 and construction 26?
Design in 22. This coming year, okay. Right. But construction funds were not available until right. fiscal 26. But because
we did move up, because we talked about that, trying to move up the design phase.
We've accelerated design to 22, and we are working to accelerate construction to an earlier year so that we can get that project on the ground.
I just wanted to make sure that was on a record and make sure the mayor knew. You want to make a cut? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No reflection on our CEO, but I just hope, and I'm not being sarcastic, I just hope that the lights go up before the underground transit start in Florida. I say that sincerely because it's been almost, I'm repeating it, almost 15 years now. And again, going back to your point, Vice Mayor, the underground transit is not a new concept, Just unfortunate, Florida seemed to be behind the eight ball all the time. And again, it's not slapping anybody's face. It's still 20 years. New York, Boston. When I was a kid, I was underground transit was big. And I just hope, Nick, thank you for thinking outside the box to make this happen for the Glades community. Many of you, again, when you travel out to the Glades, you do it during the daytime. But imagine doing it at night when families, single moms are driving on that lonely road at night and it's dark and they have a mechanical failure. No call boxes. I'm repeating it over and over again. It's that this board, many of you are new, perhaps have not been exposed to this 10-year request. And I'm hopeful that maybe we can get it done within the next 2 years and not 5 years. Everybody around here, the names and the titles will have changed. Vice Mayor may be the president by then, but we hope that this TPA would think outside the box with the support of our CEO to make this happen within 2 years and not 5 years. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're working on it. I think we have made tremendous progress. We actually have a project. It's on the books. It's scheduled. Design phase is going to start next year. So I hear you. We all hear you. Thank you. Any other comments? If not, then we'll move forward to item 1H. Item 1H is our consent agenda. And unless anyone has a comment or a question or wishes to pull something from the consent agenda.
Yes,
I'm
please.
I'm gonna move approval.
I'm sorry, hold on.
Oh, I have my card up. Okay. Yes, I would like to remove appointment of Mr. Frank Cooney from the Citizens Advisory Committee. He's gonna be unavailable, so. Wouldn't want to approve him and him not be able to do it. Item H2, please remove that from the consent
H2.
Agenda.
H2, okay. So you want to pull it completely from the agenda?
Correct.
Okay. Margie, Matt.
Go ahead. Mr. Chair, I'm going to make a motion to approve the consent agenda less item H2.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
We have a second. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? With no opposed, Margie, please let the record show that the consent agenda was approved and that item 1H2 was removed from that agenda. Okay, thank you. Moving right along. All right, we're to some action items now on an item starting with item 2A. And the first one is a motion to adopt legislative policy positions. We're going to get an update from the TPA Deputy Director of Program Development. Andrew, you're on, sir.
Great. Good morning, everyone. It's great to see everyone. So I'll be going through the 2021 TPA legislative and policy positions that are up for discussion for you all and then for an action by you all to vote upon. And really what these are is a culmination. It's a of multiple positions, policy positions that you've all seen in other ways that you've supported through or endorsed through resolutions. So this is really taking all those and then rewriting those into 10 statements that I'll be going through. To restate our mission and vision to collaboratively plan, prioritize, and fund transportation towards a safe, efficient, connected, and multimodal transportation system. So today, really focusing on that collaborative point of this. And so these policy positions are these things that really matter to you all collaboratively to move forward together on, right? Not only at our local and county and regional level, but also how we push these towards at the state and federal level. So why do this? The first is to grow local consensus on a future mobility vision. So we've already put that path forward in various ways. We're balancing products and land development patterns. So not only looking at how we're going to be funding the transportation system, but what other instances out there are impacting how we're having our future mobility vision. So land development patterns and how we're impacting those policies. Also considering timely pursuit of additional revenue sources to fund that future mobility vision and to advance the TPA in the Southeast Florida vision in the state legislature. And as our director, Uren, mentioned, influence federal transportation reauthorization bills. So we're currently operating under Fixing America's Surface Transportation Act, FAST Act, and that expires by September 30th of this year. So Congress is working towards new legislation and new federal transportation spending bill. So having a say on how we're going to be prioritized at a federal level.
Just a quick question on that. Are they still going to continue doing this 1 year increments or are they going to modify that?
You know, last time around, it was extended with the small funding bills for a while. So it seems like they are making more momentum. I think they will pass something by the 30th. That's my interpretation of it. Nick, I'm not sure if you have any.
Right now, it looks like Congress is on the trajectory of passing a five-year bill.
To the extent that they
don't get diverted to other priorities between now and September 30th, I think it'll be a new five-year bill.
That's high risk. That's high risk. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Okay. So what prior TPA actions is this based on? As I mentioned, this is really a collection of multiple policy positions that we've supported or endorsed through other various resolutions and documents. And I'll just summarize those and they're on the screen. So the first is our 2045 long range transportation plan that we passed in December 2019. That sets our goals, objectives, and targets for the TPA. And it also identified a high capacity transit network to start studying and prioritizing. Next is our Vision Zero Action Plan that set a target of zero fatalities and serious injuries on our roadway network. And also included in that Vision Zero Action Plan was a series of actions to further towards that target. And that included legislative, educational, and roadway design actions for state and federal consideration. And then there's the Southeast Florida Regional Transportation Plan of 2045. And so this is through Southeast Florida Transportation Council. This is a group of the urbanized area of Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach. This is the regional plan that is a culmination of the TPA's LRTP and the other two partners, agencies, LRTPs, into one regional mobility vision. And so they set that regional mobility vision and then also set a series of consensus regional policies that this board saw a few months ago and provided their support for. The last one I wanted to mention was the MPOAC, so the Metropolitan Planning Organization Advisory Council, and that is a collection of all the MPOs, which we are as a TPA, in the state that come together, and they also set out policy positions, and those main ones that we took from there are related to sustainable revenue sources, providing flexible funding, and then providing funding for technology and innovation. So I'll be going through these based on our vision of a safe, efficient, connected, multimodal transportation system. So the first one being safe. And these policy positions came from the Vision Zero Action Plan. So these are highlighted in there. The first is to change state and federal law, to expand distracted driving laws, obey crossing guards, automate speed enforcement, and require helmets, and include safety technology on new vehicles. Also to enhance education by providing annual safe walk bike curriculum in our schools, requiring driver's ed in high school, and then requirement to pass tests of pedestrian, bicycle, and motorcycle laws to obtain or renew driver's license. And lastly, to revise roadway design standards. So how we're designing roadways on the local system and on the state system, and to be more towards designing our roadways based on our context classification of the roadway, using our target speed instead of just existing speed, and then allowing installation of safe pedestrian crossing treatments at mid-block and unsignalized locations. So providing more flexibility and opportunities to provide those types of pedestrian treatments. Chair, you have a member who would like to come.
Please go. Okay, sir.
Just a question. By the way, this is, I thought it was excellent. I don't remember whether I saw this in prior years, but it was a great scoping here. I'm always interested on the pedestrian crossing treat. I think you mentioned this, but I want to make sure the intent is there. The crossings at mid-block and unsignalized locations, distinguishing between 2-4 and 6-lane roads, because we have a good one probably. There's a lot of known ones for 2-lane roads, but the dilemma comes in when you're talking about, you know, bigger roads. And I'd even be interested in what exists now for the because we've got an area, you know, in Jupiter where we've had fatalities and we've been looking for years to do something. It's a 6-lane road. So again, If we make progress on this, I think, you know, there'd be tremendous application. And I say the progress more in the 4 and 6-lane roads. I'm not suggesting we can't improve 2 lanes, but just given designs for those, you see them all over. We just need to implement more of those. But anyway, is that implied here that it's, I think you said it, that it's going to cover 4 and 6-lane roads as well?
Correct. That covers all types. Obviously, there's different design treatments and warrants for that. I believe Nick might have some more guidance.
I'm just going to take this as an opportunity to mention that there is a national standard called the Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices that dictates for local governments as well as state DOTs when and where you should install pedestrian crossings and when you should say no. It sort of establishes the priority for balancing mobility and safety and pedestrian inputs and whatnot. That document is currently proposed for revision, and there's a comment period available for the next 2 months. And so we at the TPA, as a means of implementing this in anticipation of your approval of this, and because it's already part of our Vision Zero Action Plan, we are reviewing that and trying to make sure that the specific instances mentioned by Councilman Koretsky are addressed in the revisions to the MUTCD. We need tools in the toolkit that allow for a balance between safety and mobility on our bigger roadways. And I think Indiantown Road is the exact example that we're considering, where there's a location just west of alternate A1A, where there are a lot of pedestrians crossing, and the DOT said, yep, there's a lot of pedestrians, but there's not enough pedestrians to put up a full traffic light. And it's a 6-lane road. And so we don't feel comfortable putting up a hybrid beacon to give the pedestrians crossing. So we're just going to leave it alone. And we need to revise the MUTCD so that we don't finish on let's just leave it alone when we have a known issue of pedestrians running and playing Frogger on a 6-lane relatively higher speed facility. We've got to do better than that. And so we're trying to make strategic revisions to the MUTCD to give us tools to do better than that.
Thank you for that understanding. That was awesome. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Moving on to efficient, to provide funding to advance autonomous, connected, and electric vehicles and infrastructure. And this next one is related to creating a more efficient process for delivery of local projects using federal transportation funds. So it's to allow MPOs within large urbanized areas to directly receive federal transportation funds or to swap federal and state funds to maximize efficient delivery of transportation products on local facilities. So this is really about giving that opportunity to explore these two policies to try to create a more efficient process for our locals to administer projects through the federal process. Connected, to promote complementary land use patterns around existing and future high capacity transit routes, and to use existing maintenance of funding and pursue additional funding to reconstruct roadways with enhanced pedestrian, bicycle, and transit facilities, especially near high capacity transit hubs. And lastly, multimodal, to advance a regionally connected, high capacity and efficient transit system to support anticipated growth and long-term mobility, increase flexibility within existing state transportation programs to allow the funding of high capacity transit investments and supporting infrastructure, and to seek additional funding sources at all levels to build, operate, and maintain high capacity transit. So, you know, as I mentioned, we have that identified 561 corridors in our long range transportation plan. Our partners in Broward and Miami-Dade also have been moving forward with their high capacity transit corridors. So this is figuring out how we can fund those by creating more flexibility and then also seeking additional revenue sources. And then I'm just gonna highlight some of the discussion that was at the advisory committees and their recommendation. So they did recommend endorsement mostly overall, TAC 21-2. There were dissents from Palm Beach County Engineering and the town of Jupiter due to the inclusion of the wording high capacity transit. The citizen advisory committee was 9-2 with West Palm Beach and Palm Beach County District 6 dissenting due to concerns over the MPOs directly receiving federal transportation funds to deliver projects. And then the bicycle trailers pedestrian advisory committee was 13-2 and Palm Beach County Planning and Engineering dissented due to inclusion of the wording for high capacity transit. And then it also noted concerns, the BTPAC as a whole noted concerns regarding the traffic impacts associated with construction of dedicated bus or light rail lanes on overcapacity roadways. So a lot of discussion evolved around the inclusion of the high capacity transit language.
I just got to ask a question. What's the problem with high capacity transit thinking? Are they saying that we should never consider looking at high capacity capabilities for public transportation for the future and that we should just build roads? I mean, what's the message? I really don't understand. Yes. If you can't answer it, that's okay.
I can paraphrase for sure the discussion. So I'm going to go back a slide onto the multimodal, which it is where it discusses some of that language for high capacity transit. It's in the first two, in all three of those bullets. And so on the left here, though, you see just examples of what high capacity transit could look like. So there's light rail operating in a dedicated rail lane. There's bus rapid transit, which can also operate in a dedicated bus lane. And then there's what is considered BRT light, which is primarily operates in mixed traffic. So the concerns that were raised from Palm Beach County staff on that was related to potentially taking away lanes of traffic on congested roadways right now to put in transit facilities.
Okay.
Is that?
That's good. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Yeah. Just a point, and I think you've alluded to it. A lot of this, what we're talking about, is going to take money. And so I think that as a body, the Board of County Commissioners is going to have to, at some point, address the issue of what we're going to do when the IST runs out, if we're going to have the intestinal fortitude to put in front of the stakeholders a transit tax, a penny tax, to have a dedicated funding source. We keep on discussing a dedicated funding source for public transit, for infrastructure improvements, and I think we're going to have that dialogue over the next year or so, and at some point, hopefully come to a consensus that this is something that we feel is necessary to, again, deal with these infrastructure issues and that our stakeholders are going to embrace it going forward. So I think it's going to be a debate, a discussion, and hopefully we'll have, again, the foresight to be able to move that forward.
Well, to that note, Nick and his staff are currently working on a presentation that hopefully in the near future we can present to this board a recommendation and to get a discussion from this board to determine in a more formal sense, as a TPA board, do we agree that an additional funding source needs to be provided if we are truly committed to expanding the public transportation capability across the county? It's not gonna happen without a funding source that would be dedicated to the endeavor and all the items that would fall under that. So we are looking to bring something to formalize that thinking and have the right level of discussion here with this board. Like I said, in the near term, we don't want to come with, we want to try to have as many questions answered as possible. One of the questions we're trying to figure out is, how much funding do we really need? How, you know, and two, how do we distribute that in a equitable way, you know, through unincorporated county and the 39 cities? And what it is we're going to be asking the cities to buy into, giving that that kind of funding would be available. The other important component to this potential new funding revenues would be, it has to be sustainable. It can't have a short window of time. And I don't know what the best approach to do that, but clearly that would be something that would then come from this board in a more formal sense to the county commissioners. To have to hopefully move forward with that and something that gets put on the ballot and then we actually get something put in place. So I agree. I think Commissioner Weiss, you were next.
Thank you. Can you define high capacity transit versus low capacity transit?
Sure.
Or whatever other word you want to use, because I'm just curious what's the definition of high capacity, I guess.
Sure. So it probably isn't as specific when it comes to a definition on that, but typically a high capacity would provide other types of premium of services with that to increase efficiency. And it might have less frequent stops and more long distance stops. So for example, you could have like off-ticket boarding, you could have level stops to make it easier to get onto the transit vehicle. And then you could also have more limited stops. So it's a quicker service.
So the capacity is really a misnomer?
No, it's a combination of seats, frequency, and efficiency.
So is there a definition?
Unfortunately, there's not a specific definition where you say if we've provided 300 seats in an hour, we're low capacity, but we get to 301, we're high capacity. But there's a concept that would say, okay, we ought to be doing no less often than 10-minute headways between vehicles. We ought to be providing vehicles that have enough seating to move a high volume of people. If we're talking about reallocating space within a roadway.
Well, I'm just trying to understand.
Right. So I'm giving you a sense. We want to be able to at least replace the capacity of a travel lane for cars.
So it's really to increase. It's more than we have today.
It's way more than we have today. Yes.
But
it's an investment in infrastructure and visibility for that infrastructure that says this is a transit corridor. There are stations that are branded that are highly visible that are not out of the way and neglected, which is unfortunately an apt description of some of our transit infrastructure today. We're trying to say this needs to be preeminent. It needs to be high visibility and it needs to be serviced frequently, whether it's large vehicles every 10 minutes or whether it's smaller vehicles every 3 to 5 minutes. It needs to have a high degree of reliability so that you're not standing there waiting for 20, 30, 40 minutes for the next vehicle to come and get you. I mean, so high capacity means you really need to replace the capacity of the vehicle travel lane if you're talking about reallocation of that space. And a vehicle lane carries around 1,000 cars in an hour. So you've got to move a lot of people in a lane to say this is worthy of reallocation of space.
Just to add a context to that, I'd like us to think about, to think about what our long-term vision is. And long-term could be 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years from now, all right? When folks are looking at back 20 years from now saying, what was that board thinking about, like 20 years ago? The if we set the vision now, then the vision is provide capability and solutions that we really give citizens in our county the true option of deciding, I don't need to take my car to get to where I want to go. Now, is that a, you know, visionary? Yes, it is. To get from where we are to there, there's a lot that has to be done, but at least we're looking at a conceptual vision. And what are the things the vision does for me? It's not bounded. It's not predetermined by you got these many cars and these many solutions. To me, that's the engineering level of implementing
this. I don't mean to interrupt you, but my question was really about trying to understand what the issue, what the engineers were, and understand.
I thought
maybe there was a definition of high capacity that they had an issue with.
Yeah.
Because that's what was. Yeah, but that's what I'm trying to understand. If there was a specific definition that they had an issue with versus it's more of a nebulous sort of concept. And that's all. I thought maybe there was something there because it ended up from the town of Jupiter. It ended up from the engineers in
the county.
Palm Beach County. So that's what I was trying to get to, Mr. Chair.
Okay. No.
Good question, Greg. So thanks so much. I wanted to follow up on Vice Mayor Weinroth. When we do have that discussion about money and where it's coming from, I would like to be sure we include that in November of 2024, we're going to be sunsetting the penny sales tax, and it would be something to add in there for sure, because it wouldn't be a tax increase. It would be a continuation.
You're jumping ahead of us, but that's good. That's good thinking. And okay. In fact, that is along the lines of the thought process that we're going through now is the current penny sales tax for infrastructure is scheduled to sunset, but it's possible to sunset earlier if the amount of funds are received that hits the threshold. I don't know where that is, but clearly, looking for that to be gone, hopefully, and then it's kind of, we're replacing it with something that has a different focus, but it becomes
and verbiage will be super important as opposed to saying increasing.
It's a valid point, but
taxes.
But that's a valid point, but going to also to Vice Mayor Renwath's comments is at the end of the day, it will become something that the elected officials at the county level, and also I would say at the city levels, have to be committed to. And we have to be able to say to our citizens, we're doing this, and we need to be able to give them some definition of what are we going to deliver, all right, for this. We're not just looking to, we're looking to go down a different path. I think it would be considered a bold move, innovative and visionary, but we need to have to some degree to say at the end of the day, here's what we think we're going to deliver to our citizens and improve their quality of life in terms of their ability to get from point A to point B to point C, hopefully without having to use a car.
Right. And the last thing I just want to say is when we start doing the math, I love the math that Stephen Abrams brought up a few months ago at one of the millions of meetings that we all had about transportation, which 400 cars equals 8 buses equals 1 train. So every time we think about the 1,000 vehicles on, let's really, really do the math. So yes, we might eventually need to take away a lane so that there's a bus that's always there. And that is the definition of high capacity.
We might not. I mean, I've challenged our engineers to come up with innovative ways of implementing solutions. And by the way, to me, a public transportation efficient system, Nick alluded to this, should be predicated on the individual schedule, not the service provider schedule.
Sure.
So to me, I want something showing up every 5 minutes, right? And I want it automated. And I want it to figure out certain times of the day we need to put more cars or more whatever it is, online because the traffic, the number of people goes up. That's just my vision, all right? And I've looked around. It's not only in our country, but in other countries, a lot of that kind of solution implementations are beginning to happen, are on the drawing board. So
agreed. And the last thing I'll say is the TPA does a great job. They've always done a wonderful job looking, like Weinroth was talking about earlier, about looking at who else is doing something. We can see who did it well, we can see who did it poorly, and we'll go
to learn from that, right?
Yeah, so thank you.
Thank you. Before you, I think Jim was up.
Just from what I heard that the engineers commented, being one myself, and reflecting on the fact that, eventually this may have to go to a penny sales tax type of, funding, what the engineer said, quite frankly, is going to be what it takes to sell this thing. If you tell the public that you're on a congested roadway and we're going to shut down one lane to add transit, you're never going to get any support for that. So that, to me, that's practical, personally. And, you know, I can tell you that for years, in as a council member in the town, we have a tri-rail location, and we've done a lot of planning and thought about that. And the thing that always occurred to me is we always talk about, and we're always going to, I mean, in my lifetime, we're not going to get transit. Well, I shouldn't say that.
You don't know how long you're going to be.
No. No, I was going to say something that took something radically different than today will exist. But I mean, right now, the transit that we're talking about is like main corridors. And I know that, for example, town residents benefit from a north-south corridor. We support that. But, you know, we concluded that anything we ever do based on the way we're built out and likely to be is people are going to have to take some alternative mode to get to there. People want it. It's an option. It's needed. But there never really is discussion about the other 98% of the users.
But there will be. That will be part of our discussion.
Agreed.
No, that would be part of our conversation.
Because that's
absolutely
how you sell them to believe that, and in large part right now, it would be vehicles. I mean, that is the way. And I'm just saying in large part. So, for example, for our residents, you know, a station in the garden serves us. If your intent is to go long distance north-south, you know, I'm just saying, you know, personally. So I just want to kind of weigh in. So I think the engineers are being practical. When you, I appreciate your asking.
I hear you. I understand. And a lot of very good points were already brought up. These points will be expanded in further discussion when we present something to this board. And you raise something, that's the question we need to answer. This is where getting a commitment from the 39 cities and unincorporated areas of what piece of this big pie, this big strategy, because there are many moving parts, we'll have to play for us to set a path for the future and how where we need to go. But very good points. Vice Mayor.
Yeah, I think that, you know, this all points to the fact, again, that we're going to have this conversation now before the IST runs out, because, again, it's going to be easier sale to our constituents and to our stakeholders if we're able to substitute one pane for another, if they're already used to 7% sales tax, rather than it going down and then having to resell them on the idea. But like we sold the IST, I think we're going to have an idea of what we are looking to use that money for. I mean, right now, my predecessor, Stephen Abrams, shows up on our doorstep with his hat in hand looking for money for Tri-Rail. And he does that with Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County because they are not self-sustaining. We need to be in a position to have a dedicated funding source so that that can run and that we can reduce the headways on a public transit so more people embrace it, and that we can address these other issues as far as complete streets, as far as safety for bicyclists and pedestrians and everything else we want to do. But it's going to take money. Gas tax is starting to go down because people like me are driving EVs. And so we have to find an alternate funding source. So, you know, my colleagues here who are probably staying a little quiet so we don't have a debate over this now are going to have to grapple with this and ultimately have to market this if we are of an agreement that this is the way to go forward so our stakeholders will embrace it. Thank you.
Okay. Does anyone else have their card up?
Mr. Chair, if I could make two clarifying
points. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Just because I want to make sure that we all leave here with the right understanding of the status quo. Two points I want to clarify that came up in the discussion just now. First, the option available in state law for a county to issue a surtax is a transportation surtax, not restricted to just transit. I think someone had used the word transit surtax. It's not restricted to only funding public transit. It can be used for all components of a transportation system, construction of facilities, and operation and maintenance of those facilities and services. So I wanted to make sure the terminology we were talking with was appropriate for and consistent with state law. Second thing is there was a mention of the expiration or sunset of the existing infrastructure surtax. That date is actually the earlier of the end of calendar year 26 or the collection of the predicted total funding that when the IST was established. So it could expire earlier than the end of 26, but if the funding amount predicted doesn't ever, is not reached, then it would extend to the end of December of 26. So I just wanted to make sure that we have that understanding of the surtax. Based on the actual collections, even through the pandemic, it seems likely 24. That the surtax will expire in the middle of 25 or early 26, based on how much is being collected on an annual basis. But I just wanted everyone to understand that it's the earlier of one of those two events.
Where do we get 24? How they get?
So the idea behind November of 24 is that a general transportation surtax can only be approved by the voters of a county at a general election. So your options are limited to even year elections in November.
Okay, good. Yes. Yeah.
I just follow up on that. On that note, would with the potential of collecting the tax for the online sales, would that also apply to the IST? Will the IST apply to that as well? Do you got anyone know? And if so, would that it would accelerate how quickly the money comes in.
We're monitoring carefully the amount collected. So if the amount collected is affected by the capture of online sales that are not currently being captured,
it would increase,
but will be in the future, then it would accelerate expiration of the surtax. Correct.
Sales are sales.
Somebody,
if that happens,
somebody find out if they're connected.
We'll look into that. Yeah, we're looking at that.
Let me send something. I'll ask Todd. Maybe he knows.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay. This conversation, let's label it to be continued. All right. We will be coming to you with an agenda item and specific information and specific discussion points for going forward. Now, with that, going back to do we have a motion whether or not for legislative policy positions? But before I do that, do we have anyone out virtually have their hand raised who would like to make a comment on this subject?
No, Mr. Chair.
And there were no advance comments submitted?
I'll make a motion to adopt the 2021 legislative policy.
Hold on, I'm going to wait for a motion. Do we have any physical comment, people here who submitted a comment card who are physically present? No?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And do we have any other comments then from members of the board relevant specifically to the presentation we got for our legislative agenda? None? Seeing it? Now I'll take a motion. Now I'll recognize a motion.
Okay. Yeah. Motion to adopt the 2021 legislative and policy positions.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Margie, can we do a roll call?
Yes, sir. So the motion on the floor is to adopt the TPA's 2021 legislative and policy positions as presented. Before I call the roll, virtual members, please unmute your microphones. In-person members, please remember to turn on your microphones by hitting the button on the base. And please respond by either saying yes or no when I call your name. Joni Brinkman is absent. Jonathan Pierce?
Yes.
Stephen Grant?
Yes.
Jim Koretsky?
Yes.
Douglas Lawson is absent. Maria Marino?
Yes.
Melissa McKinley is absent. Michael Napoleon?
Yes.
Christina Lambert?
And I apologize, I was out of the room. Can you just repeat the motion?
Yes, ma'am. So the motion on the floor is to adopt the TPA's 2021 legislative and policy positions as presented.
Okay, and I'm for the record, just very supportive of this. Most of the items here just can't because of the city's resolution against State Road 7 that's included in the long range transportation plans. Thank you.
Joseph Paduzzi?
No, for the same reason, due to the inclusion of State Road 7 in the long range transportation plan.
Julie Casale?
Yes.
Fred Pinto?
Yes.
Chelsea Reed?
Yes.
Mac Bernard?
Yes.
Yvette Drucker?
Yes.
Andy Thompson?
Yes.
Lake Worth Beach is vacant, so they will be marked as absent. Catherine Waldron?
Yes.
Robert Weinroth?
Yes.
Greg Weiss?
Yes.
Steve Wilson?
Yes.
It passes 15-2, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so the motion is approved. Thank you. All right, item 2B is a motion to approve either a TPA staff modifications or BT PAC endorsed modifications to the 2022 Transportation Alternatives TA scoring system. And we're going to hear from
Alyssa.
I'm sorry, Alyssa.
Yes.
Alyssa is our TPA pedestrian and bicycle coordinator.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Alyssa Frank, and as Mayor Pinto said, I am the Palm Beach TPA's pedestrian bicycle planner. So thank you for being here today. We are going to be discussing modifications to the 2022 Transportation Alternatives Scoring System. So the TPA has two annual funding programs that we have opportunities for municipalities and other entities to apply for. The first is the Local Initiatives Program, and the second is the Transportation Alternatives Program. We're gonna be focusing today on the Transportation Alternatives Program. And so you guys are aware, this is a program that is, again, available annually through the TPA. It offers about $3 million every year, and the funds are available to the applicants 3 years out. So for the Transportation Alternative Program project selection, the Transportation Planning Agency, our staff, objectively scores projects based on our long-range transportation goals, objectives, and targets. Then, after we do our scoring, the Bicycle Trailways Pedestrian Advisory Committee, or BTPAC, re-ranks these projects. And then, annually in July, the TPA Governing Board adopts the final list of projects. So our TPA's policy goals and objectives are based on documents that we have approved. The first is the Complete Streets policy that we have. This accommodates transportation users of all ages and abilities. Then we have Vision Zero, which has also been adopted formally by you guys. And this has the goal to work to eliminate traffic-related fatalities and serious injuries, and then have a focus on pedestrian and bicycle-related crashes and mitigating them. And then, of course, our long-range transportation plan goals and objectives, which include a focus on the environment, decreasing vehicle miles traveled, the complete streets, so adding paved pathways, and a focus on pedestrian and bicyclists, and then equity, so connection to transit hubs, schools, places of gathering, and then multimodal, so growing the walk-bike transit mode split. On the screen, you see a map of transportation alternative projects that have been funded over the past 10 years. We show two different colors. In purple, you'll see projects that were funded in between 2010 and 2015. And then in orange, you see projects that were funded in 2016 to 2020. And then in the dark gray area, you actually do as well see the urbanized areas outline. So to touch on this, a few examples of TPA-funded transportation alternative projects include a Lake Worth shared-use path that was constructed in 2017. This is actually a pathway that runs through a neighborhood and connects residential areas to schools. We have seen pedestrian improvements in Jupiter on A1A, constructed in 2015. In Wellington, pedestrian pathway bridge, 2019. Bicycle lanes, buffered bicycle lanes in Tequesta in 2018. So on. So why are we here today? We are here because the BTPAC has concerns regarding greenways. So in September of 2019, the BTPAC, or Bicycle Trailways Pedestrian Advisory Committee, created a 5-member ad hoc committee to assess how greenways are scored in this program. This eventually evolved to a conversation about how, if we award enough points for unpaved pathways in non-urbanized areas. So we looked into how other urbanized peer MPOs score unpaved pathways. And we found that no other large urbanized MPO areas in Florida actually award points for unpaved paths in non-urbanized areas. And the map that you see on the screen is actually all the counties that are highlighted are the counties that we had spoken to and reached out to see. So the major urbanized ones. What about the TPA's Greenways and Trails Plan? Well, this was actually approved in December of 2015 as a guidance-only document. At the time, Palm Beach County was the only county out of six of them that had any requested additional paved unpaved pathway miles. No other counties had any interest in doing that. Since then, Florida has created, or FDOT has actually created, the Shared Use Non-Motorized Trail Program for 10-foot plus paved pathways. And of course, in our long-range transportation plan that we adopted in December of 2019, we did have a focus on these paved pathways. So a few other additional unpaved pathway funding opportunities that I did want to share include Florida Recreational Trails Program, the FRDAT program, which is for recreational development assistance, the Rails to Trails program, and People for Bikes for smaller community block grants. So now I'm going to walk you through some of the supported changes that we have for the 2022 transportation alternative scoring. So on our scoring, we previously had a 10-foot plus paved shared use path under pedestrian facility types. We support moving it as to have it as well under bicycle facility types, and shared use paths are both facilities for pedestrians and cyclists. This is the only change that we have to the adopted scoring. The only other proposed modification the TPA supports from the current scoring system is adding the term regional before park, and then providing connections to regional parks, designated natural areas, and FDOT SunTrail facility network, in addition to what we currently have, which is shopping centers, recreational centers. And now I'm going to let Sally Shannon from Palm Beach County's Environmental Research Management come up and present the BTPAC's TA scoring recommendations.
Good morning, all. I'm Sally Channon, and I'm Palm Beach County's Department of Environmental Resources Management representative on your Bicycle Trailways Pedestrian Advisory Committee, which I'm just going to call BITPAC through the rest of this presentation. She's going to try to find the first slide on my presentation. So give a little bit of time there.
You don't find it by the time the music starts.
I'm sure you'll find it.
Here, do you mind if I ask a question before?
Sure.
So one of the questions that I had was in regards to the native flora and fauna, does the expanded paths have an adverse effect to them, or is this beneficial?
Could you repeat your question?
So you're asking of creating paths through, you know, green space, so to speak. Is that correct?
Not exactly. Some of the pathways do go through green space. All of these projects go through the same full NEPA evaluation for environmental effects. But quite frankly, what we've found is that exposing the public to these areas, letting them know they exist and getting out and being able to enjoy them is actually good for the environment, because it creates a group of people that are supportive of those natural areas existing and not being turned into some other use. Okay, I don't think she can find her my beginning slide. I'm here to present BIDPASC's request to the TPA Governing Board, which appears before you. That's to adopt the BIDPASC recommended changes to the 2022 Transportation Alternative Scoring System and to review the goals, objectives, and targets to include trails. Before I go into the details of specific changes we're requesting, I wanted to give a little background on how the committee got to the point of making this request. Between 2005 and 2011, the TPA, then known as the MPO, approved 5 off-street multi-use trail projects that received transportation enhancement and or Florida Stimulus Scenic Enhancement, which is the ARA portion there, funding. These are not just off-street projects. As you see, they are kind of off-the-grid projects. They make use of canal banks and old roadbeds going through natural areas, for example. And only one of these projects, the one that where there's the picture of the opening ceremony, was paved. The other 4 were unpaved. What we have been told as BIDPASC, and you've been told again today, is that these types of projects have zero priority in the 2045 long-range transportation plan. There's no performance measures or targets or objectives that specifically address this type of project. The result of those 5 previously approved projects is shown, is illustrated on this map. You can see the Martin County line, the Palm Beach County side. The trails that you see appearing in solid yellow represent the projects that were funded through Transportation Alternatives Fund. They create a backbone network of trails with Riverbend. That's the part where there are all those tiny little squiggles. Riverbend Park up in Jupiter serving as a hub. The darker green wash over some of that photo is the bulk of the 31,000 acres of land that was purchased as natural areas using funds from 2 bond issues approved in the 90s, totaling $250 million. The lighter green represents conservation areas that are outside of those areas purchased by the county. The trails don't just connect the communities they pass through, which are somewhat rural, Palm Beach Country Estates, Jupiter Farms. I don't think you would call Sonoma Isles or Mirasol rural, but they don't just connect those communities to one another using routes that are not accessible by car. So they create shortcuts for those, for people who are traveling via bicycle, but they form the backbone of a tourism draw. And when you go past those darker county projects out into the light areas, and you see all the way at the top, sort of a dashed line leading off towards Jonathan Dickinson State Park, within the range limits of Jonathan Dickinson State Park up in Martin County, going down to Southern Boulevard in Palm Beach County, there's about collectively 165,000 acres of natural area. And this is bigger than some of the smaller national parks. The national parks are well known as economic drivers. And it was the idea of this being an economic driver, being creating an ecotourism destination, that was one of the motivating factors in approving these projects in the first place. During a workshop that BIDPASC held back in August of 2019, we ran one of those projects through the current scoring system, and it totally bombed. So the specifics of BITPAC's proposed modifications appear before you. Again, the green underline is added and the red strike through is deleted. The main area of contention is this 8-foot unpaved path that would be off-road. The reason that BITPAC supported putting this in there is a very simple one. It's money. Although since the last project, one of these off-road trail projects was proposed by the county, the state has implemented this Sun Trail program. However, in order to qualify for Sun Trail funding, you must be a paved project. And the issue is that when you are going through environmentally sensitive lands, and in fact, when you are going on canal banks, you can't necessarily get permissions to put down pavement. The other changes to the scoring system up here in there where it looks at the connections. So we have proposed adding multiple trail intersection, regional park, or designated natural area to both of those criteria area. Collectively, what these changes would do, would allow a good greenway type of trail project to score in the neighborhood of 60 points. Now you as the TPA have the ability to fund anything as long as it gets a minimum 25. But the issue is getting a project in the door, because certainly the staff with the county and most of your staffs are going to be evaluating and trying to find a good match between a project and a funding source. And part of that, before you put in all of the effort of putting together an application, which is time consuming as well as money consuming, is to look at the scoring for that particular grant source and figuring out whether you're likely to get in the money. So BITPAC was proposing these changes basically to, if there anybody out there wanting to do a project that would expand upon this trail system, to get them to come in the door so that we can take a look at it and make a recommendation to the TPA. Oops. We're seeing results. We're seeing results from this, the creation of this network. We have events represented in the center there. Our department is the Parks Department are doing events where we're getting people out cycling and using these trails. We've done a number of what we call bike hike events. Some of a big almost 2,000 acre section of the county natural area is only accessible by the Pantano Trail. The young woman that you see there is actually filmed on the Pantano Trail. She was part of a 7-day, 70-mile venture that was filmed by a nationally known filmmaker. The results of that have already aired on PBS. The film's going to be used in the classroom for environmental education, but it is also being used by Discover the Palm Beaches to promote ecotourism in the area. Up in the left-hand corner is the Karen T. Marcus Sandhill Crane Access Park. This lies at the junction between Bluegill Trail, which runs along the C-18, and the Mirasol Trail, which runs parallel to PGA Boulevard. Not shown here, but we feel significant, is that the town of Jupiter, back on that Sonoma Isles project, had them create a ramp so that you could get off of the sidewalk and directly into Riverbend Park and thus connect to these trails without having to otherwise drive that very short distance between Sonoma. I'm going to go back to that slide. You can see where it is. It's all the way up there just to the right of Riverbend Park. you can get into that trail system without having to get in your car and transport your bike over to Riverbend Park. So we're seeing, we feel, a very positive results in the ecotourism category. It's not the only reason that BITPAC was supportive of these changes and supportive of these types of trail. Our Delray Beach representative is always telling us that he considers this type of riding sort of the gateway drug to other more adventuresome or leading to more confident riders, more likely to ride on city streets and use the bicycle as a mean to run errands and other activities. These are the safest of the safe routes. We've seen a huge spike in use along trails. I don't have any counts for us. We did get counts for use along the L40, which runs around the Art Marshall Refuge. They saw a spike. They were seeing numbers that represent 3,500 users a month, 7,000 users a month, getting up and using those trails, which are a safe way to get around. So to repeat, what we are asking is that you adopt the BITPAC recommended changes to the 2022 TA scoring system. But more important is we want your guidance. Right now we're hearing there is no support for these changes under the current goals, objectives, and targets. That's why we're coming in February, when the application cycle doesn't really even begin until September. It's because if you feel that there should be some priority given to this, it is allowed. In fact, the federal legislation that talks about what's supposed to be in your long-range transportation plan specifically lists enhancing tourism as an item. It doesn't say anything about what priority you're supposed to give it or how you're supposed to accomplish it. That is up to the individual TPAs. So we're coming now, not with a recommendation, adopt one or the other. If you feel comfortable adopting our scoring system, that's what we recommend. Otherwise, take the time to go through and add some performance measures that will make staff feel comfortable that they have direction from you to give some sort of priority to these projects sometime in the fairly near future, not beyond 2045. Thank you. Are there any questions of me?
Hold on, before we take questions, please hold on. Do we have any members from the public virtually who raised their hand and want to comment on this agenda item?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, you have no pre-submitted?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, do we have any anyone that's here that wants to comment from the public?
I have not received any comment cards.
No cards? Okay. Then I'm going to close public comment on this agenda item. And before I go to the board for comments, I want to, Nick, kind of give us some context on what we're asked to do here.
Sure.
Thanks.
Well, as a reminder, the TPA governing board has three advisory committees. You have a technical committee, you have a citizens committee, and you have a bicycle, trailways, and pedestrian advisory committee. The Bicycle Trailways Pedestrian Advisory Committee, as you can tell from Sally's presentation, is passionate about pedestrian activities, about bicycle activities, and we love that. We appreciate that. We appreciate that service. We appreciate that passion. And Sally rightly pointed out that in earlier times, the MPO, prior to my coming on board, was more involved in funding unpaved trails or unpaved pathways in rural areas. She mentioned there were five projects, four of them unpaved in the 2005 to 2010 timeframe. Well, since then, a lot has changed. We've migrated our focus to the more urban area emphasis that MPOs were frankly created to address. MPOs were created in federal law to give urbanized areas a voice in how transportation projects are built, to support the outcomes that matter most to you as board members, as elected officials representing your communities. In order to implement your vision, the vision of a safe, efficient, connected, and multimodal transportation system, we have recognized that we need to emphasize investment in transportation dollars that promote routine usage, routine activities that address safety, that address health, that address welfare of our communities, that provide safe routes to school, and that ultimately encourage routine shifts in behavior so that we can start to see our walk, bike, and transit percentages change to the targets that were set in our long-range plan. We want people to walk more. We want them to bicycle more, and we want them to do it every day. And so one of our challenges is to determine the prioritization of routine facilities and the construction of routine facilities over the prioritization of recreational facilities that are used on a more occasional basis. And so we've created a scoring system that allocates our limited resources based on the priorities that you told us we wanted to achieve. Some members of our pedestrian and bicycle committee don't think those are the right priorities, and they wanted an opportunity to come and say to you, we think rural pathways deserve more attention. And Sally made very compelling arguments to suggest that there are reasons why rural pathways, unpaved pathways, deserve more attention and deserve more funding. When we went through the discussion with our committees, we did our best to recognize what are we hearing from them? What are we missing that they value that we're not really incorporating? And that's why we bent over to show them all the available grants for unpaved pathways. And that was Alyssa's slide that we said, okay, if you really desire for these types of facilities to be built, there are funds available to you to construct these facilities. One of the responses we got was, well, those are 50-50 matching funds. If we go to the TPA, we can get up to 100% of the construction costs covered. We'd really like 100%, not 50%. But we understand. The desire is to build unpaved pathways in certain locations, and we showed them places where they could go. We also agreed with them that shared use paths are superior to on-street bike lanes when you're trying to promote users of all ages and abilities and create a safe environment that people are willing to ride their bikes on or walk on with their children or with our population who are choosing to age in place. They're not likely to put themselves adjacent to higher speed vehicles. So if we can construct shared use paths, that's a great outcome for a lot of members of our community. That's why one of the recommendations that they made to the board, we endorsed. We said, let's give shared use paths double credit so that we're in the locations where we're able to construct those, we fund them. We put the money on those outcomes. And then we also agreed with some of their recommendations that connections to certain types of facilities are valuable. But again, it's a prioritization question. The TPA scoring system says the most valuable connection you can make is infrastructure to a transit hub, because we want to encourage people to walk, bike, and use transit. So if you have the opportunity to build a pathway next to a transit hub or to build a pathway in a rural area, and you only have limited dollars, you should pick the transit hub connection, because that's likely to influence behavior and impact people in a more long-term way and on a routine basis. So all that to say is we recognize the importance of our committee. They had a concern that our long-range plan had not been developed appropriately in consideration of their desires and values. They wanted an opportunity to come to you and say, hey, we think you should modify your scores. And if you agree with us, you should tell your staff to modify your long-range plan so that it recognizes the importance of these facilities. We as staff said, our long-range plan was already adopted. We're trying to implement it as faithfully as we can, and we don't support all of the things. But again, you're the elected officials. If you tell us we need to support those things, we change the long-range plan, we present it to you for adoption, and we change what we allocate points to and where we put the money. But we don't currently, because of the plan that you've told us to implement and because of the goals and objectives that you've put in our document, we don't currently see that these recommended changes are consistent with our long-range plan and our vision. So long story short, we think we've got the right scoring system with a few tweaks. We understand the desire for more funding to go to pathways, and we've pointed them to some additional resources outside of the control of the TPA that they can pursue. And we think that should address the concern, but the committee members thought otherwise and wanted an opportunity to appeal to you for a policy decision.
Okay. You're up, Jim.
Question, Nick, number one, is it possible that they could get the other grant and then make up the 50% with the TPA? I'm just trying to understand that, as opposed to just coming to us. And that could be a quote pre-qualification or something, just asking.
It could. I think the concern of the committee is that our scoring system, even if they were to show that they have funding from an outside agency, it doesn't give them enough points to be likely to succeed in ranking in the top of our transportation alternatives projects that are submitted.
Okay. And, first of all, I'm open-minded to this because, I know that one of the members on that GRIT committee, I didn't speak with her, but, is promoting healthy lifestyles. Healthy lifestyles causes people to walk where we want them to walk in lieu of vehicles. And so actually what my attention was drawn to this that I never really noticed before is we're pretty narrow-minded on saying that I'm going to come back that projects that create dedicated pedestrian facilities within 1 mile of the transit hub, and I get the transit hub should be longer than that, should be 3 miles. I know that from experience, because let's look where all we have transit hubs. How much are we capturing if we're saying narrow-mindedly 1 mile is desirable? So I do think that, and then I went to transit hub one because where we. They were doing an edit on the pedestrian project. Again, pedestrian project, if it's within 1 mile of a shopping center, pretty narrow-minded. I'm glad they added regional park dedicated natural areas. They kind of opened my eyes up here thinking that all these years, and particularly if we really want to go, vision into the future on transit, we got to promote healthy lifestyles. And then we got to be more open-minded to projects and corridors leading to centers like a regional park or a shopping center or a transit hub, because isn't that our goal? Yet we're not supporting it. It just never occurred to me before. I don't expect to get that in here now. Let's draw attention to that in the future, because it goes to my point earlier about when I really were pondering as an elected official in Jupiter how you get the people to the transit is even on criteria binds our minds to that, I think we need to be more open-minded to that.
Sure.
We will be talking more about that.
Okay.
And that conversation we're having before, the point you just made. I think you were next, Steve.
Yeah. Thank you. Trying to get back to my original question, you said there was a study done with an acronym. What was that acronym? That says that having people is better for, going through natural areas is better for the environment?
No, I wasn't referring to any acronym, but just that we have found with the, we've done a lot of outreach programs now. The county purchased all of these areas. Most of them have facilities. Some of those areas are only accessible with these bike pad trails. We've done a number of outreach activities to get people out. For most people, it's an eye opener. They had no idea that there was a 13,000 acre natural area sort of sitting in their backyard, or that's what they're driving by when they're going down PGA, or what they're driving down when they go down Indian Town Road. And what we found is that when you get people out into these areas and they see the beauty and they enjoy the opportunity to be outside, they become more supportive of the natural areas program, more supportive of funding for our management, and more vocal in support because they know they're there and because it's something that they can enjoy.
So the question is, there's no empirical evidence. There's never been a study that says that this is better for the environment.
There probably has been, but I don't know. Okay. I can't cite you one.
I think that would be one of the things I would want to consider, is that doing this is better for the environment of the natural areas that were supposed to be natural. The other things is that, with the increased people, there's bathrooms and littering. With the transportation alternatives, I didn't know ecotourism was the priority for the board. I don't think that's my priority. When I'm going through my 100-year-old city and there's sidewalks that are in certain places and there's no sidewalks in other places, that's an issue. I was riding my bike to my city commission meeting on Gulf Road, and all of a sudden there's no bike lane, no sidewalks. And, I don't feel comfortable going 35 miles per hour on a beach cruiser. And so I had to go walk my bike on the grass. And I think the main thing is that the county's collected hundreds of millions of dollars worth of impact fees to expand roads. If they said that we wanted to get a mobility fee, the county could collect tens of millions of dollars to expand these paths. And so to try to get transportation alternative money for these paths that don't necessarily help people get to their school or to work is not a good use of the funding, because I think school and work is the major priority that we really should have with the TPA, not necessarily ecotourism, until we get all the schools and works paths done first. So thank you for your information, and I'll be voting in the negative for these amendments.
I will say that BITPAC has been very supportive and always given a high rank both to complete street projects and to projects that very clearly to us improve the safety, because the emphasis of this committee is getting more people on bikes and getting more people walking. So it's not really that, wait a minute, we want to change the whole focus of the TPA. We have, and I'm sure will continue to be, very supportive of those particular projects, especially ones where we see safety issues, because we have a population in some cases that has to bike to work.
All right, thank you.
First, let me say thank you for your presentation, and for the county commissioners that were on the Florida Association of Counties discussion yesterday. DOT Secretary Kevin Tebow, his number one priority is safety. His number two priority is mobility. His number three priority is technology. Number four is people. And what I mean by people, it's the staff to help support one, two, and three. So for me, anything that we do here at TPA, our number one priority should be safety. And when we look at transit alternatives, I think what we're looking at is safely pivoting away from cars. And that's what we're doing by having bike lanes and pedestrian walkways. And I understand Mr. Kretzky when he said that he thought it should be more mileage from a transit hub, but the 1 mile from the transit hub was for pedestrians, the 3 miles from a transit hub was for bicycles. I do see in the BT pack that they wanted to take out the 4 foot plus unpaid path at two points and make that an 8 foot unpaid path off road at 5 points. So we have addressed unpaved paths in the pedestrian facility. Maybe there is some way we can address an unpaved path in the bicycle facility type. I don't necessarily believe it should be an 8 foot unpaved path off road at 5 points, but maybe there could be an unpaved path in that in the bicycle facility type that would give a little bit more for an unpaved path, but also understand that there could be an unpaved path within 3 miles of a transit hub. So that would be a suggestion. I'm not in favor of all the changes, but I would say maybe a compromise of such, and leave the 4 foot unpaved path. So I just want to remind everybody that transit alternatives are for safety, and that's what, it's not about ecotourism. It's not about taking people to see our parks and recreation areas, because we have programs for that. It's for moving people safely, getting them off the road, getting them to and from work, getting them to and from home, getting them to and from school. Thank you.
Councilman Chelsea.
Thank you. I think somewhat I'm going to be echoing Commissioner Grant and Commissioner Marino and why we're here at the TPA, but also as a person, the ERM is really important to me. I actually brought this today. So this year I'm trying to go to all 33 ERM spots, either on foot or on bike. I spend a lot of time in nature as an athlete. And so I understand the importance of why you're here today. Last month, when we talked about the Safe Street Summit, the TPA had just gone on a bike ride through all kinds of areas within West Palm Beach where there are families that don't have automobiles, that utilize sidewalks to get food, to school, to doctors, and there aren't crosswalks, there are utility poles in the middle of the road. So the key two words we need to keep in mind right now are priority and ranking. That's what we're talking about right now. You want us to discuss the priority that we give the trails that are not being utilized on a, that are being utilized in nature for ecotourism. And we want, you're bringing us this opportunity to re-rank in order to accommodate that. I think that is wonderful and valid. I applaud the initiative. However, as Commissioner Marino said, we're here to provide safe streets. We're here to support Vision Zero. We're here to make sure people aren't dying just trying to get their groceries. So as important as what you're saying is, I can't dismiss the priority of taking care of the folks that need to really, really have safe streets. So if we can have 20 or 30 people a month have a beautiful experience in nature, that's great. But we could also have 300 to 500 people get an improvement on a street corner that could change their lives. And so that's where my priority would be. But thank you for coming.
Okay. I don't see any other cards up. No, I'm sorry. I missed your card. Good.
Thank you. That when you raise your card late, you realize a lot of what you were going to say has already been said. So I don't want to repeat a lot. But I'm a big fan and user of unpaved pathways, and I appreciate what they're there for. And Nick clarified for me, my original question was whether these off-road unpaved paths were considered transit or recreation. And it seems to me they're much more recreational use versus transit, because the goal is to encourage routine change in behavior to get people off of roads and onto pathways and alternative transportations. I don't know that unpaved pathways in rural areas have the impact that we want now, where we have to prioritize our funding. I mean, I believe we should find ways to put more unpaved pathways in rural areas to encourage their recreational use, but I don't know that that's a priority for us in our scoring system. I do like the changes, I like the combined changes of the WARE proposed by the BITPAC as well as the TPA changes to increase, because, you know, if you can get to these trail hubs and regional parks through other places, that should be scored better so you can take your bike to those places versus driving there. So I like increasing the, giving more points for the increased WARE, but under the what, I'm more happy with the TPA's recommendations than the BITPAC's. But I really appreciate your presentation.
Okay, any other members of the board have comments? If not, I'd like to give the public a chance to comment. I didn't give them that before. Do we have any comments? Anyone raised hand who's attending remotely?
No, Mr. Chair.
Any with no prior comments submitted?
No, Mr. Chair.
Do we have any comment card from people who are present?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, then I'm closing public comment on this agenda item. And I guess I will look for a motion to approve the recommendation from TPA staff.
I'll make a motion to recommend that we approve the changes from the TPA staff, please.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. You want to propose an amendment to the motion?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I propose that we add the WARE recommendations from the BITPAC to the TPA recommendations.
Okay. You want to comment on that? Nick? Just one of the points.
I'm wondering if we could pull up the BTPAC recommendations slide. I'm talking to Kelsey and our staff to see if we can get that slide up so we can
put them up side by side. I mean, flipping back and forth is hard to do. So you printed your stuff. That's more
Mr. Chair, you need a second for that amendment before you discuss it.
Okay.
I'll second the motion.
We have an amended motion to make a modification, and that motion has been seconded. Therefore, let's figure out what it is we're looking to do here.
The BITPAC has additional changes in the WARE section to within 1 mile of a transit hub, trail intersections, regional parks, or natural areas. I think that's a good scoring criteria to encourage paved pathways that help you connect to those areas as well. So I think that I would like to see that incorporated in the changes we approve.
Any other comments, questions? You have a question, Nick?
I think this makes sense. The substitute motion, or the amendment rather, would approve only the addition of points for a shared use path as both a bicycle facility and a pedestrian facility, which is part of the TPA staff recommendations, but it would approve the changes shown on this slide as far as where a project is located based on the BTPAC committee recommendations.
That's what I would have preferred to say.
Yeah, okay. I think we understand the content of the motion.
All right, so we're clear what we need to do to include that modification. That's what I'm asking. You're clear on what we need to do. Okay. All right, so we have an amended motion and a second.
Mr. Chair, you need to ask the maker of the original motion if they accept the amendment.
That's what I was just going to do.
Sorry.
That's okay. We have an amended motion. Does the maker of the original motion accept
it? Sorry, it was me.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yes, you do? All right. So is that okay? Do I need the second to agree
to it? And the seconder has to agree.
The second has to agree as well.
Second agrees.
Okay.
All right. So now you have your amended motion.
Thank you very much. We have an amended motion. We have a second. Margie, can we take the roll call vote?
Yes, sir. Okay. So the motion on the floor is to approve the 2021 transportation alternative scoring system with the requested modifications for the project creates dedicated pedestrian facilities and the same for bicycle facilities to include the language multiple trail intersections, regional park, or designated trail area. I had a motion by Councilmember Reed and a second by Councilmember Thompson. So those that are participating remotely, please unmute yourselves. And then those in person, if you can remember to hit the base when I call your name. Joni Brinkman is absent. Jonathan Pierce?
Yes.
Stephen Grant?
Yes.
Jim Koretsky?
Yes.
Douglas Lawson is absent. Maria Marino?
Yes.
Melissa McKinley is absent. Michael Napoleon?
Yes.
Christina Lambert?
Yes.
Joseph Peduzzi?
Yes.
Julie Casale?
Yes.
Fred Pinto?
Yes.
Chelsea Reed?
Yes.
Mac Bernard?
Yes.
Yvette Drucker? I'm sorry, can you turn your...
Yes.
Thank you. Andy Thompson?
Yes.
Lake Worth Beach is vacant, so they will be marked as absent. Catherine Waldron?
Yes.
Robert Weinroth?
Yes.
Greg Weiss?
Yes.
And Mayor Wilson left the meeting, so he will be marked as absent. It passes unanimously, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you for letting me know in the record. And thank you all for your comments, and thank you for your work and effort in your presentation.
Thank you very much for having me here to present. And on behalf of BITPAC, I can tell you that we'd be very happy about the 10-foot shared use off-road trail, and then also the ability for projects to gain points with connections to the natural area. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Item 3A is we're now on informational items. We're going to get a presentation of performance measures dashboard from Jason Price. He's our TPA TIP coordinator.
Mr. Chair, before he goes, can I
be recognized? I'm sorry.
Can I be recognized?
Sure.
Thank you. I just, for the record, I'd like to amend and change my vote on item 2A to oppose.
Okay. So noted. Can we do that?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. To be clear, you wanted to change your vote on item 2A, the motion to adopt the 2021 legislative and policy positions as presented, to a no vote. Okay. So then, Mr. Chair, the number that we're voting on that one would change to 14-3 opposed. And okay. Then for the record, if you could state the reason for opposition.
For the record, the reason for the opposition is opposing the proposed alignment and extension of State Road 7.
Okay, so consistent with the commissioners from West Palm Beach.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're good. Okay, you're on, sir.
All right. Good morning, everyone. I usually bring amendments to you. Today, I'm bringing a dashboard, and it's regarding our performance measures. Now, our performance measures, if you recall last month, you approved the safety performance measures and reaffirmed our Vision Zero commitment of zero fatalities and serious injuries. That information is now represented on our website in the form of a scorecard and a dashboard. And all of this information is derived from and reflected in our 2045 long range transportation plan and is also part of our transportation improvement program. So what you see on the screen here is our performance measure scorecard, which is a snapshot of all of the metrics in which we track and aim for targets. So you see our actual performance in those categories, as well as the target we're looking to achieve. There's four different categories here, the first being preserve, and the next three are from our vision statement, which is safe, efficient, connected, and multimodal. Since we've been focusing quite a bit on non-motorized facilities, I'd like to just walk you through the performance measure dashboard from this page by clicking on one of the metrics and giving you a bit of a tour of the performance measure dashboard. The one I'd like to highlight is shared use paths and 10 foot, because we haven't talked about it enough. And this is going to highlight what we've been doing. So let's go. So you see separated bike lanes. Let's go to the next tab. You see those dialog boxes to the right and to the left. We'll take you through all of the different types of facilities in which the metrics score and track. From here, when you scroll down, you see we are actually on target. We are meeting our target for 10-foot shared use paths. You also see in a graphic format from 2015 to 2020 that we are steadily building paths throughout Palm Beach County throughout the years. And so when you scroll down even further from that, you can see graphically where those facilities are. And you can, just to go dive a little deeper into the map, if you expand it to full screen using the buttons on the side, you can kind of scroll in and see we have shared use paths. Although this is the bicycle facilities network, shared use path act as both. They are both on the pedestrian facilities map and bicycle facilities map. Just as a representation, you can see that there's quite a few shared use paths in West Palm Beach and throughout the county that show you that we're steadily building a network throughout the county. So this is a place you can go to find out where our facilities are and where we've been building things over time for these facilities. And if we escape out of this and go back to the metrics, there's quite a few other metrics. So there's metrics for each of these categories: preserve, safe, efficient, connected, and multimodal. When you click on connected, you'll see that there's a description of what connected means to the TPA, and then what we're scoring in the scorecard, and also what we're doing about it. So in terms of what we're doing about it, what plans, programs, funding opportunities do we have to answer the call, to respond to and build a connected multimodal network? And two of the programs that you guys are actively, participating in is the Transportation Alternatives and Local Initiatives Grant Program. And the Transportation Alternatives Program, just to highlight it, just again, that's one of the main programs that we use to build these types of, multimodal infrastructure. So as a summary of all of the TA projects, I just wanted to highlight from here, because you can access it from here, is a list of all of the projects that this program has funded and constructed throughout the county, throughout the life of the program. And you saw some highlights from Alyssa in terms of the pictures and the years that these facilities have been constructed. And I'm just bringing it to you again to highlight, we have performance measures that track our progress and meeting all of the metrics. And this is a place that just highlights one particular program and what we're doing about it to answer, to meet the goal of a connected multimodal system. So that's what I have for you as a quick presentation and overview of our performance measures dashboard and the metrics in which we track.
Okay, we thank you for your presentation. Any members have any questions? Yes, go ahead, Jim.
I'm sorry, council member, can you turn your microphone on? Thank you.
I'm sorry. Yeah, could you go to the first slide? I wanted to just make a comment about that. But as you're pulling that up, I really appreciate you're sharing this with us, because that's a tremendous, you know, I don't often go online to kind of hunt for stuff if I don't know it was there.
Yeah.
So really, this has really opened my eyes up, and this is a tremendous resource. Thank you.
Sure.
Now, I was on the other one before this, where you were showing the performance metrics.
Yeah, can we go back to the first page? It's to get to this web page. We do have a drop-down box on the front page under plans and programs. You can get there by going to performance measures, clicking on that tab. A little further down, this is how you'll get there, just so for your reference.
Okay, and again, thank you, because you, the agenda item was to share this with us, and I think that's phenomenal, because I want to share this with others, but I couldn't help myself. It's always the case that when you look at performance targets, and I think I've said this before, but one that always still bothers me is bridges in good conditions, because we're at 87.4%, and we're going to target that we're okay with them getting worse all the way down to 50%. So I know that wasn't on the agenda, but I've said that before. That one will always continue to bother me because it shows that not only we're not trying to improve, but, well, you know what? Let's not worry about them. That's a real bad target.
Something we need to talk about.
Good point. And you can click on those, with those bridges and get a lot more information on each one of the bridges, where they are in the county in terms of all of the bridges in good conditions, the ones in poor conditions. And I've highlighted this through our committees that, you know, some of the bridges that are in poor condition are in our transportation improvement program and are actively being addressed.
Well, they are now, but this says they don't have to be.
We're meeting the target, but we're aiming to improve every bridge.
I think your point is that we should be more aggressive in our targeting. Yeah. And we certainly could talk about that.
Mr. Chair, for clarification, what Jason was referring to is when a bridge falls into the category of being in poor condition, it is either renovated, rehabilitated, or replaced. And he was referring to US 1 in Jupiter as an example of a bridge that's upcoming to be replaced because it's fallen into the poor condition category.
Any other members' comments? No? Thank you very much. We're going to move on to the next information presentation, which is the Community Profiles Dashboard. And I write James Reinhardt. He's our TPA Transit Coordinator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everybody. Again, my name is James Reinhardt. I am the new lead transit coordinator for the Palm Beach TPA. In case you all enjoyed that dashboard presentation, I have another one for you. If you go to our main page and go to plans and resources in the dropdown, there is a tab that will be, say, community profiles towards the bottom. Yep. And if you click on that, it will direct you to a dashboard. So many of you might remember we used to have a community profiles page on our website that you could go to your community and click on a PDF and it would give you a socioeconomic rundown as well as some infrastructure details and maps. We have revamped that, updated the information and put into this dashboard format that's a little bit more easily accessible to navigate between one community to another. So starting on the dashboard, if you start on the left side, we have a list of the municipalities and county districts within Palm Beach County that you're able to click on. On the right-hand side, we have the main window. It defaults to the socioeconomic summary, defaults on Palm Beach County's socioeconomic summary. And then below that window, we have a series of tabs. And there's a tab for roadway ownership, a tab for total lanes, a tab for bicycle facilities, pedestrian facilities, our frequent transit network, and then the 2021 to 2025 TIP projects. If we can move my face from the top right-hand corner, I'd like to show, thank you, Margie. I'd like to show that we have three buttons in the top right-hand corner. In those buttons, the first one is the magnifying glass. You can type in your address and zoom to your location. Within the county. The middle one is a legend tab. If you hit a drop down, then it'll give you the information that was being projected on the map. There's a different legend button for each map. And then the third one is if you prefer to use a different street map or aerial, you can customize the map while you're looking at it at that time. Now to demonstrate how this works, Kelsey, if you could go to Boynton Beach as an example, and we zoom in and it'll zoom to that location. And then all those maps that we just showed will update. So if we go to bicycle facilities as an example, since we've been talking about that today, it will show bicycle facilities within clip to that general area around Boynton Beach. And then if we want to learn a little bit about the socioeconomic summary of Boynton Beach, we can click on that tab and it'll update the summary to that location. And this will give you a rundown of first a concept map of where that location is. We're able to download this as a PDF, but if you scroll down from here, we will show key population information, the environmental justice population information, commuting patterns and commute by mode and travel time, education attainment and employment data. And again, that can be downloaded as a PDF, so you can copy and save it for your personal use if you don't want to just continue to go to this dashboard every single time. Now, if we go back to that bicycle facilities map and you wanna pan from this location to, let's say, my village and also Mr. Chair's village, Royal Palm Beach, we can click on Royal Palm Beach in the list. It'll pan over and update the information to that community. And again, every single map, the socioeconomic summary will also update as well. And then if you want to reset back to the county as a refresh, you can click on the highlighted community again, and it will reset back to the main page. We presented this to all of our committees. One of the comments we asked was, is this able to be used with a screen reader? And the answer is yes. I had a colleague of mine from my previous position test it out, and they were able to use it with JAWS and also Microsoft's screen reader as well.
That's really a lot of data you got there. How do you verify the authenticity of the data points?
So all of the data is actually in our TPA map that's on our main website. This is a way to navigate to the different communities one at a time to look at it in a little bit rather than holistically.
And Mr. Chair, I'll supplement that response and say we're continuously updating at least the infrastructure related data based on what we're able to build. And that's why we care about including local projects, county projects, as well as federal and state projects in our 5-year TIP. So we know when to update infrastructure information. As far as the demographic information goes, we rely on external sources for that. The American Community Survey and the census data is feeding this dashboard, and we're providing these data points to you as they become updated by others.
Correct. And on that socioeconomic summary, below each data point, it does provide the source of where that's coming from.
Thank you. That's very good. Any questions? Members? Seeing none for the ones that are still here.
Well, I just want to say thank you. I'm already digging deep into Palm Beach Gardens. This is really cool. Thank you. Good.
That's the whole purpose.
I'm with Chelsea. This is great information, and a lot of times we need to be reminded what's actually on our website, and you know, because this is great information. So thank you for your efforts.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, now we will look for do we have any partner agencies here who want to give us an update? No? Okay. Some administrative items. Is there anything on our list of administrative items that members of the board would like to have an update on? If not, I'm going to look for us to adjourn. Our next meeting will be April 15th. Thank you all and stay safe.